Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for being together with us on this Tuesday evening to begin our brand new series, Living Our Best Selves. I want to express appreciation to my dear chaver, my dear friend, Rabbi Shai Schechter, for putting the amazing learning program together, such a vast and diverse array of teachers and educators, and the Yasher Koach for all the Talmud Torah, all the learning, and hopefully all the growth that will take place as a result. So a huge, huge thank you to him. It's wonderful to see so many familiar faces, new faces, old friends, and hopefully over these weeks of learning together, we'll be able to create some new friendships as well. I was struggling and debating exactly what to do in this time slot. It is, as I joked before we began, it isn't a late hour, 9 o'clock. Florida is in the same time zone as New York, but it might as well be in a different time zone because 9 o'clock in Florida is the middle of the night, even though for some up in the Northeast, when I grew up there, it was the very beginning of the night. So it's not a classic text-based learning. I don't want to do something too heavy, but I want to talk about how we can be growing. We're in a very unusual, obviously, and awkward, in many ways, unprecedented time period. And there are two sort of modes of behavior that I'm noticing that people have. There are those who are in the survival mode, those who are trying to get through the day, those who are trying to not murder their spouse, their children, those who are there trying to simply survive until the end of the day with their sanity intact, not a simple order these days. And there are people who, despite everything happening around us, despite what's happening to us, despite the doubt, the uncertainty, the lack of confidence that we can have in anything, nevertheless remain b'nei aliyah, are aspiring, are ambitious, are trying to grow. We can take the circumstances that have been cast upon us, whether it's a full-fledged quarantine or lockdown, God forbid, heading back to that, or even if we've begun to open up, we're far from returning to what we knew as normal, and we have found time, we found opportunity. So again, you can be in survival mode, or you can be in growth mode. And what I want to spend our time doing over these weeks is talk about how we can get into a place of growth mode, how we can get into a place of breakthrough, that maybe there's some solitude, that maybe there's some even serenity that's being provided to us, some space and some margin, which often is not allowed. We're not running out every night. There aren't places to be. They're not places to go. They're not things from which to have FOMO. I mean, I don't know if you could have FOMO of Zoom events, but there is no fear of missing out right now. We've all learned a little bit the joy of missing out, the JOMO of life, that even though there are things happening around us, we don't have to be everywhere, and we don't have to compete. That nobody's posting pictures of their incredible dessert they had or their exotic vacation that they took, because we're all, so to say, to a certain degree within a similar circumstance. And the question is, how can we break out of a survival mode, a minimalist mode, seeking to get by with the bare minimum, and how we can get to a growth-oriented mode? It is the summertime, there is some more space and margin for many, and what are our dreams, what are our hopes, what are our ambitions? What are our aspirations? What do we want to achieve in the area of health and wellness, in our personal lives, in the area of character development, in the time that we're spending in the three realms in which we live, one of which is very often neglected? The Maharal in Pirkei Avos says that Pirkei Avos is brought to us by the number three. You see, three things the world stands on, three things removing from the world, three things this, three things that, three things the other. And the Maharal in his commentary on Pirkei Avos says that you always see the number three, it corresponds with the three venues, the three dimensions that we live in simultaneously. Two of them we know are popular, Bein Adam L'Makom and Bein Adam L'Chaver. We have a relationship with the Almighty. We hope that we're not just going through mitzvos in a superficial manner, but we hope that they are all a platform for growing close with Him, to feel His presence in our life, to talk to Him with our davening, and to listen to Him from our learning and from life's events, that every day we're feeling His presence. I saw a beautiful insight recently that we say in Mizmor LeDavid, in Tehillim Chof Gimel, in Psalm 23, Hashem ro'i lo echzar, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not lack. It's often translated as Hashem ro'i, Hashem is my shepherd, and when I see Him as my shepherd, when I know that all I have comes from Him, lo echzar, I'm never lacking. Whatever I have, I'm meant to have. And if I don't have it, I'm not meant to have it, not meant to have it yet. But I saw a beautiful interpretation in a new Sefer on Shabbos and Zmiros by Reb Melech Biderman. He says, Hashem ro'i lo echzar. May I never be echzar, may I never be lacking in feeling Hashem ro'i. May I never be lacking in feeling that He is my shepherd, that whatever's happening is by design, not by chance, that it's not random, but rather it is a reality that He has crafted, that He has curated specifically for me. Hashem ro'i lo echzar. May I never be lacking in the feeling, in the palpable, tangible feeling that I'm in a conversation, that I'm in a relationship, that I feel this presence. So Bein Adam L'Makom is one area and one arena. Bein Adam L'Chaver, of course, are our interpersonal relations. And this week we're about to start and launch the 3 weeks, a time that we continue to suffer and we continue to unfortunately, so to say, be punished for the horrific splinter, the tension, the terrible conflict that began so long ago in Yosef and his brothers and continued down into Mitzrayim and continued in the splintering of the Beis HaMikdash. And ultimately Hashem said, you don't know how to treat each other, you can't act as one, then I, the one, don't want to reside among you. And of course we'll mourn, and for 3 weeks we will grieve and we'll pledge and we'll promise, and hopefully we won't, but too often we do go right back to the same sort of tension and conflict that has unfortunately characterized us for too long. So we work on that. We work on the having a sense of love and a sense of loyalty for one another. Jewish unity, we work on having Jewish unity. But there's a third realm, and it's a realm that we too often neglect, the Maharal says, and it's called bin adam la'atzmo. It's the relationship that we have with ourselves, with ourselves. Do we ever stop? Do we ever pause? Do we ever have a conversation? Do we ever discover who am I and who am I meant to be? And what am I meant to accomplish? And what am I meant to achieve? And what triggers me? And what excites me? What empowers me? And what depletes me? Do we ever stop and study who am I? Are we comfortable in conversation with ourselves? Or is there too much noise? Is there too much static? Are there too many interruptions? In fact, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, Hillel taught, Im ein ani li mi li, ukshani la'atzmi ma ani. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? And if all I am is for myself, then what am I? It's a beautiful Sefer Menachem Tzion, Rabbi Menachem Ben Tzion Zaks, who was the son-in-law of Rotzi Pesach Frank, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. The Menachem Tzion lived, there was a big rav in Chicago, a great Talmud Chacham, and he has phenomenal sfarim called Menachem Tzion. And he has a commentary on Pirkei Avos, and there he says, Im ein ani li, mi li. If I'm not in conversation with myself, if I don't have a relationship with myself, if I'm not looking out for who I can be and how I can realize the best version of myself, me, Lee, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? If I'm not looking out and I'm not working and I'm not advancing and I'm not nourishing who I am and what will realize and fulfill my potential and why I'm here in this world, then me, Lee, who's going to do it for me? It's an amazing book called Essentialism. We'll see in these sessions that we have over the next few weeks whether we maybe do one on the Torah, putting essentialism in Torah terminology. Greg McKeon, a great author. It's The Art of Saying No, how to reduce and consolidate your life to that which is the most essential. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal book. I'm almost tempted to call it a sefer. And in there he has a language. In there he has a line. And he says, if you don't prioritize your life, someone else will. Someone else will. I love productivity books and self-help books, and to me, often is nothing new. It's taking our timeless Torah ideas and it's communicating it in more contemporary and relatable language. And in that book, Essentialism, Greg McKeon says, if you don't prioritize your life, someone else will, which is simply a paraphrase of Hillel, Im ein ani li, mi li. If I don't prioritize my life, if I don't look at how many hours I have in a day, in a week, in a month, if I don't look at where I am within my life and the context of the goals that I hope to achieve, that I promised I would make happen, if I don't ever say, what are my talents and my blessings, what are my opportunities and my privileges? And privilege is nothing to apologize for. To be proud, to recognize privilege in Judaism means responsibility. Privilege means, how do I have to make the world a better place, repair the world in a better way? But if I don't ever stop and analyze and take inventory of those things, and at the same time, what are my liabilities and challenges? What are the obstacles? What is the baggage that I was born with? What are the limitations that were placed on top of me? And I put all that picture together, that whole package together, and I ask myself, it may not need Lee. If I don't do that, me Lee. Who's going to do it for me? If I don't prioritize my life, who will? However, kshani la'atzmi ma'ani, but if I'm for myself, if all I do is self-centered, narcissistic, if all I am is a pleasure seeker, if all I care about is fulfilling my needs, then ma'ani, what am I? What is the sum total of my life? I am nothing and it is nothing. So we live in three dimensions simultaneously. There are three relationships we have to be aware of and mindful of constantly. And they are bein adam l'makom, bein adam l'chavero, and bein adam l'atzmo. How do I relate to, how do I exchange energy with the people around me? How am I dealing with this pandemic? Am I in eggshells? Are people walking on eggshells around me? Am I flying off the handle, losing my cool? Am I struggling with anger? Am I overwhelmed with anxiety? Am I feeling envy? Am I tempted by arrogance? What's my relationship with others around me? And what's my relationship with Hashem? Where does Hashem fit in this pandemic? Have I asked myself? Not the why, but the what. What am I meant to learn from it? And how is it meant to impact my life? And where is Hashem in this whole story? And lastly, this is a time when a lot of that noise, we're able to shut it out and disconnect from. And we're not competing. Things aren't competing for our time and for our attention and for us to go those places as they normally do. It's an opportunity to nourish the relationship in Adam La'atzmo, the relationship we have with ourselves. It may not be me. If I don't spend time becoming the best version of me, then me, Lee, nobody's going to do it for me. No one's going to bring it out of me. No one's going to reveal it. I have to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm so self-centered. It doesn't mean that I blow off my family, my responsibilities, my relationships with others and with Hashem, because then, k'sheni la'atzmi, if all I care about is me, then ma'ani, even the most valuable, beautiful things can be done to extreme that they're detrimental. I remember once reading an article, I think it was the New York Times, about how exercise can become an addiction. The person who's training for an Ironman and therefore never sees or spends time with their family, never has balance in their life, you've taken a noble pursuit and you've corrupted it. And lahavdil, I can tell you, there are people who have a level of asmada, their commitment to learning Torah is the only thing, it's the best thing, it's the most amazing thing. Of course, keneged kulam learning Torah, but at the expense of your family, at the expense of taking care of and providing for your family, at the expense of your health and your well-being, we need balance in our lives. And those are some of the things I want to talk about after this long-winded introduction to the time that we're going to spend together. Hopefully not just being in a survival mode, but getting into a growth mode. What are the goals? How do we pursue them? How do we achieve them? How do we measure? What gets measured gets done. If you can't measure it, then it can't. Peter Drucker, the great management guru, said, what gets measured gets managed. I think that was his lashon, his language. What gets measured gets managed. Have we set goals? You know, if you want to learn the Daf Yomi and finish Shas, you have a very simple way to measure. Every day you had a daf to do, and did you do the daf that day, and are you on the path towards finishing Shas? You set a goal. You made a resolution how to do it, whether a chavrusa or listening to a shir or learning on your own, and then it gets measured, so it gets managed. But what are the other goals? Do we have goals to improve our davening? Are we just getting by with davening in our home or outside on our driveway with a mask on our face in a tent or even in shul spaced far apart from others, and we don't have the trappings that normally help elevate us, like singing, chazanas, drasha, kiddush after, not during, davening? So what are the goals that we have in our davening, in our learning? When this is all over and we look back on it 10 years later, 15 years later, do we want to say that we were proud to have survived? Do we want to look back and see what we achieved and who we became? That during these months, we finished certain books, certain reading, we lost certain weight, we took on certain practices, we went for walks with our family, our Shabbos table was transformed by the effort and the preparation we made for it. And so this is a period that we don't have to be satisfied with survival. We can strive for growth, for breakthrough, for transformation, for so much more. And as stressful as it is, and as much as there is seems to be tension operating against us, we can transcend it, we can rise above it, and I believe that we can break through from it. So the first topic I want to talk about in our time tonight, and nobody ever told me how long this year I'm supposed to go, 9 o'clock at night, we'll see. We're not going to go a full hour, maybe not even 45 minutes, we'll break it up each week. But I want to talk about, and I'm going to share my screen now, I want to talk about, can I share my screen? There it is. I want to talk about what is, I think, the prerequisite to breakthrough. And the prerequisite to breakthrough is mindfulness. You cannot break through if you're not present, if you're not mindful, if you're not really there. I want to take some sources I've shared many times in different contexts, but I want to be able to actually learn them. Every time I've delivered them, I have not been able to actually go through the text and learn them together, and I hope we have the luxury of time and space to be able to do that. So the prerequisite to be able to actually break through, to hear ourselves, the prerequisite, the necessary ingredient, the foundation to all three of those dimensions, bein adon lamakom, bein adon lachaver, and bein adon la'atzmo, is to be fully present, is to be mindful, is to be there. If you're really fragmented and you're really distracted and you're really trying to multitask in a way that you're not present, then there's absolutely no way that you can grow or break through in any of those areas. The present is not the most important time. That is a misnomer. The present is not the most important time. The present is, in fact, the only time. It is the only time that we live in. It's the only time that we can manage. It's the only time that actually exists. What do I mean by that? The past is a memory, it's history. And the future, as the poem says, is a mystery. The future has not yet happened. You're not yet there. The only time that we live with is called the present, and that's why it is a gift from Hashem. The present. Present is a gift. The present is the only time. Why do I say this? Source number 5. It's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah for us, source number 1. It's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says something astounding. Omar b'Yitzchak, ein danan ha'adam elafi masav shel osa sha'a. Do you know that when we are judged, whether it's on Rosh Hashanah or the judgment that we endure each and every day, but Hashem, who's evaluating the lives that we're leading, he's looking at only one thing. Osa sha'a, that very moment, who are we and how are we living? Now we think, what do you mean? Judgment is all about past. You're judging me on, was I a good boy or a good girl? How did I behave? What were the choices that I made? What were the consequences and the results that it brought? But says the Gemara, says Rabbi Yitzchak, that's not true. That's a misnomer. That is not, in fact, what we're judged for. We're not judged for the past because the past already happened. And you can't be judged for the future because the future is not yet here. The only thing that you can be judged for is the present. Except for who we are in that moment. Now, to be clear, who we are in the moment is informed by what we did in the past. How we behave, the choices we made, the experiences that we had. Are we nostalgic for them? Do we love them? Do we feel shame from them? Are we remorseful of them? So the past informs the present, and the future informs the present, because in the present I'm preparing for the future, of course. But while the past and the future are important for how they inform the present, the only dimension that matters, the only one that we really live in, and the one that we need to learn to live fully in, if we want to draw the richness of life, if we want to realize the best of who we're meant to be, is in fact the present. The Gemara in Kedushin, you say similarly. The Gemara in Kedushin says something fascinating. A man betroths a woman. He says, Hare at mikudeshesli, you are hereby married to me, amenasha ani tzadik, on condition that I'm a righteous person. I'm a tzaddik. I hereby marry you, and here's the condition of the marriage. The condition of the marriage is that I'm a tzaddik, that I'm a righteous person. Says the Gemara, afilu rasha gomor mikudeshes. This individual who said that is a rasha gomor. He doesn't wear a mask. He doesn't distance from others. He risks other people's lives. He's on his way out of McDonald's on Yom Kippur with a bowl of ramis. He's violating every isser in the Torah. He's a Russia Marusha, a Russia Gomer. He's a wicked, evil person. And yet, he says, I hereby betroth you. He puts down the cheeseburger that he was eating on Yom Kippur while he was speaking Lashon Hara, and he turns and he says to the woman of his dreams, you are hereby betrothed to me on condition that I am righteous. I would have thought, are you kidding me? Who is this fool, this duplicitous joke of a person? Of course there's no marriage there. Of course it's utterly invalid. But the Gemara says, Mikudeshes. It's a valid marriage. Why? Shema hir b'tshuva b'daito. Because maybe in the moment, forget that a moment ago he was eating a cheeseburger on Yom Kippur without a mask and socially distancing. He's a Rasha Marusha. But in this very moment, he took upon himself that he wants to be a Tzadik Gamor. So whatever you think about in the moment is who you are. That is who you are. It's the only dimension that we live in. Do you know how empowering that is? Do you know how empowering that is to know that what I did a moment ago doesn't matter? It matters if I'm still carrying it into this moment. It matters if I'm still thinking about it, tempted by it, proud of it, nostalgic for it. But if I let it go, then it doesn't follow me. Then all that matters is the here and now, the right now. Imagine if we could learn to live that way. Of course, proud of our past, and of course with an eye towards our future, but fully present and immersed in our present. Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav, put it so beautifully in Out of the Whirlwind. And you'll see it relates to the period we're about to begin. Since Jews have a unit of time consciousness, the gap of centuries simply cannot separate them from the past. They do not have to relive the past. The past is the current living reality. Memory opens up new vistas of the time experience, and the companionship of the present and past is tightened, growing in intimacy and closeness. As a matter of fact, our relationship to our heroes, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan, and Zakkai, our patriarchs, the prophets, it's completely different from that which the nations of the world have to their heroes. To us, they're not just ancient heroes. Usually history is divided into antiquity, in the Middle Ages, in the contemporary period. But the word antiquity doesn't exist in our history. The story of Yosef and his brothers, the story of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the story of Moshe's death, all used to move me to tears as a boy, says the Rav. It moved to tears. We're about to begin a period of 3 weeks and we have to reverse engineer them. Normally when a person feels a sense of loss, they have Aninus and Shiva and Shloshim, and then Yud Beis Chodesh, it progresses, it eases, it's most intense at first, and then we transition out. And here we reverse engineer it because it feels so foreign, so much part of our past. So we start with 3 weeks, and then we narrow it down to the 9 days, and then Tisha B'Av itself is Misha Meso Mutulafanav. That is the most intense part of the mourning process, because we feel so disconnected. But Rabbi Soloveitchik says, that's not what's supposed to be. He used to hear the story of the sale of Yosef, and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and it would move him to tears as a boy. It was not just because I was a child. It was not an infantile reaction on my part. It was a human gestalt reaction. These stories do not lie in antiquity. They're part of our time awareness, part of our historical experience. Similarly, there's no archaeology in Judaism. There is history, but not archaeology. Archaeology refers to something remote, a dead past of which I am no part. It arouses my curiosity. I'm inquisitive to know about the origins. But history, to us, means something living. Past integrated into present and present anticipating future. We all know the aphorism, Evar Ayin, V'Atir Adayin, V'Hahove Keheref Ayin. It's not a Maimar Chazal, that's why the Rav refers to it as an aphorism. I think it's an Avram Fried song. Havar Ayin, the past is no more. Ha'atir Adayin, the future's not here. V'Hahove Keheref Ayin, and the present fleeting. It passes so quickly. But in my opinion, says the Rav, it's wrong. The past is not gone, it's still here. The future is not only anticipated, it's already here. And the present connects the future and the past, and that is what I mean by a unit of time consciousness. For the Rav, past, present, and future all blend into one. The reason the present is not the most important dimension, it's the only dimension, is because it blends it all together. This is a whole insight he has in Sfiras HaOmer and explaining the opinion of the Bahag, why you can, if you forget one night, you can't make a bracha, even though each night is an own independent mitzvah, because one night builds upon the other. Time consciousness requires context. The past, the present, and the future. And even if the present is independent, it's built upon the past with an eye towards the future. Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, would be a ludicrous institution if we did not have the unit of time consciousness. We say in the Kinos, on this night, Balel Zeh Yivkayun, my temple was destroyed. This night is 1900 years ago. Balel Zeh means tonight. Apparently that night 1900 years ago is neither remote nor distant from us. It is living as vibrant a reality as this fleeting moment in the present. The unit of time consciousness contains an element of eternity. There is neither past nor future nor present. All three dimensions of time merge into one experience, into one awareness. Man heading into a panicky rush toward the future, finding himself in the embrace of the past. Bygones turn into facts, pale memories into living experiences, and archaeological history into vibrant reality. The Rav describes this so beautifully. And in the next page, which we're not going to read all of this inside, philosophy is a little heavy for this time of night, but he describes that's the whole process of tshuva, and that's the whole process of personal transformation. So I want to study with you, I want to spend some time tonight and probably leading into the next time, about how we can live in the present, about how we can more embrace the here and now, how we can immerse ourselves in not the most important dimension, but what is really ultimately the only dimension. It's what it's really all about. We say in Maariv, those who've davened already tonight, we have recited a beautiful sentence, V'asir Satan milfaneinu ume'achareinu. Hashem, we ask him to remove the Satan from before us and from behind us. We say it each and every night in Maariv. But did it ever stop and occur to you, what are we davening for? Hasir Satan milfaneinu, remove the Satan, remove the voice of temptation, remove the distraction from in front of me. That I understand. I'm going to be distracted as soon as we finish the shir. I have a cabinet full of potato chips. That's the Satan milfaneinu. As soon as we finish, I have juicy lashon hara I want to share, and there's an internet I want to surf, and there are things I want to do. There's a Satan milfaneinu on any given moment of the day. There are opportunities and invitations. There are distractions and temptations. There is a yetzer hara that we are battling because we are made up of two components. We have the animal in us. An animal is defined by instinct and intuition, the animal drive, the animal impulse. And we have the Tzelem Elokim, the godly soul, the godly spirit, the Chelek Elokim Imal Mamish, that is empowering us with discipline to rule over it. And that is a battle from when we wake up in the morning until we fall asleep at night. In fact, in our Parsha, Parsha's Pinchas, it says at the end of the Parsha, which is one of the reasons we're going to mourn and fast this Thursday, we have a lamb in the morning and one in the afternoon, the Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice. That daily sacrifice, I think 586 BCE, it came to an end. The Babylonians laid siege, the animals were no longer available, and it broke our record streak. You see, the Korban Tamid was offered. It was offered every morning and every night, rain, sleet, or snow. It didn't matter the weather. Weekday, Shabbos, Yom Kippur, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, the Korban Tamid was offered. The Korban Tamid was offered. Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice, consistency and constancy and regularity, it was offered. And when it was denied us, when we were deprived of it, when it came to an end, when our streak broke, it was devastating. And one of the five reasons given why we fast this Thursday, Shavasar B'Tammuz, it was the end of the Karban Tamid, the streak was broken, the Tamid ended, that consistency, that ritual, that habit, what we could predict, what we could anticipate, what we knew would happen. But I saw a beautiful insight, a beautiful interpretation. Says the Imre Chaim, the vision, it's a Rebbe, that word keves means a lamb, a sheep, but it also has another connotation. How do we describe a person who's a gibor? Who is a mighty warrior? Who is the strongest person? The one who could lift the most weight? Who is a gibor? Who is the strongest? Hakovesh es yitzro. The word kovesh means to conquer. It means to suppress. It means to control. It means to rein in. It means to be disciplined over. So says the Imre Chaim, the vision of Tzur Rebbe, es hakeves achat haseba boker ves hakeves hashenit haseben arbayim. There's one keves, there's one act of being kovesh el yitzro in the morning. When you go to work, are you going to be honest in your business? Will you have integrity? Will you gossip? Will you compete ruthlessly? Will you cheat and cut corners? Will you exploit others? How will we act and engage with people of the other gender? Will we act appropriately? Es hakeves achat haseba boker. The keves of the boker, he says, is hakovish es yitzro in the morning. And then you come home from work. And you're about to enter your home and re-enter and re-immerse yourself in family life. And there's another yetzer that arises. Will you lose your cool? Will you get angry? Will you be impatient? What will you do with your free time at night? And again, it's hakeves achat haseba bein ha'arbayim. You have to be kovish as a yetzer at night. So we confront a yetzer hara each and every day, almost every moment of every day. The two parts of who we are, the animal instinct, the animal impulse, and the godly soul are constantly fighting for who's in charge and who is in control. I understand what it means, v'haser satan milfaneinu. Remove the temptation, the voice of desire that is from before me. But what does it mean, v'haser satan me'achareinu? Has it ever occurred to you, ever think about this? We say ma'ariv each and every night. You should pay attention to what we're saying. Sitter snippet, 6 minutes a day, you can learn everything in the sitter. Hasar satan milfaneinu. Remove this voice of temptation from before me, ume'achareinu, and from behind me. What does that mean? There are many, many interpretations which are offered about what it means. But listen to what the Menachem Tzion, to quote him again, Rav Menachem Ben Tzion Zaks. He says, milfaneinu kodem asiyas mitzvah. Sha'a satan liyafriyas asiyasa me'achareinu achar asiyas mitzvah lo lehizga'us bo. He gives two interpretations. The first is, the satan milfaneinu, the voice of temptation or distraction in front of us, is before we do the mitzvah. You're on your way to doing a mitzvah, and then, the Yetzirah kicks in. You're about to write that check in stock, you're about to click the donate button, the sponsor a sheer button, and then the Yetzirah said, you know, corona, the stock market, it's going to go down, what's going to be, who knows, I don't have to give stock right now. You're about to check in on that person, you reached for your phone to text them, but then a text came into you, and you got in conversation with another. On your way to doing a mitzvah, there can be a Yetzirah, a satan milfaneinu, that can prevent and block us from doing it. And the me'acharenu is, once you've done the mitzvah, don't become arrogant. Don't get an inflated ego. Don't be filled with too much pride. That's the first interpretation. But he offers a second interpretation. Zos va'od milfaneinu lifnei asiyas ha'avera. Shelo yasis ha'satan osan al asos kala be'einenu. Before the avera, the satan is extraordinary. The power of persuasion, the creativity, the charisma, the sales talent of the satan is unbelievable. Can convince us of almost anything. Can persuade us of almost anything. So before the Avera, before we make that mistake, before we show that poor judgment, the Satan has the ability to absolutely make us believe that it's okay, it won't harm us, can sometimes even turn it into a mitzvah. What's the Satan me'acharenu? Achar asiyas ha'aveira shel yasis ha'satan osana shiko chamura she'ein la takana b'tshuva. You know what the Satan me'acharenu? Listen to this, my dear friends. The Satan me'acharenu is when we become so stuck and so debilitated and so paralyzed by our mistakes, when our whole life becomes defined by the past, not by our present, and not with a hope and an optimism and eye towards the future. When we become so stuck, so paralyzed, so debilitated by our mistakes and by the regrets, by the wasted and lost time, by the things that we could have done better or differently, that is the Satan me'acharenu. It's part of our past. So does that mean that we're off scot-free? We don't have to think about it. We don't have to be accountable. Of course we're accountable. And we have to make amends and we have to apologize. We have to go through the process of tshuva. But we do all of that to inform. We do all of that to enrich our present. Not the past. You can't change the past. The past is behind us. Put it behind us. Put it behind us. There's a beautiful Rav Shlomo Hoffman in his sefer. Shlomo Hoffman was a psychologist who was also a great Talmud Chacham. And he has a sefer called Sichos of Rav Shlomo Hoffman. It's a magnificent work. He was a Talmud of Rav Isaac Sher, the great Musar personality. And he says in there, V'anachnu nevarachka me'ata ve'ad olam. Do you know how we praise you, Hashem? V'anachnu nevarachka, the last sentence of Ashrei. V'anachnu nevarachka, we praise you, Hashem. How? Me'ata v'ad olam. By living me'ata, now and going forward. I'm not going to get stuck in the past. I won't beat myself up. I won't hold myself back. I won't marinate and stew and perseverate on where I went wrong. But v'anachnu me'ata v'ad olam. From now going forward, don't fall prey to the Satan me'acharenu, the Satan who is behind us, who's holding us back, who's keeping us in the past, and is preventing us having an eye towards the future. Tshuva, the process of growth, getting out of survival mode and getting into growth mode, means getting out of the past and stop worrying about the future and finally live in the present. If you're anything like me, what has been so challenging about this particular time is how it is robbing us of our present, right? We're thinking about the past, but we're also much more nervous and anxious about the future. We're trying to predict it. We're trying to anticipate it. We're trying to plan for it, and it is impossible. Ask any Rav, any Rabbi, the lay people working on planning Rosh Hashanah for a community. Forget Shavuos or Batamas and Tisha B'Av. What will Rosh Hashanah look like for a community this year? How do you plan when you can't predict? What do we know and what can we do? It's impossible. It's impossible. So we're so lost and anxious about the future, we're so much thinking about the past, that we're forfeiting and conceding our present. And that is not the most important, but it is the only dimension. It's the only place in which we live. Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, what lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Within us is greatness, within us is potential, within us is possibility. But we have to get into the present to be able to live it. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, "Tzuru eizeh darach tova shidbak v'adam." What is the proper path a person should live? Rabbi Eliezer says, "An ayin tova, have a good eye." Rabbi Yeshua Omer sechav v'tov, be a good friend. Rabbi Yossi shachin tov, be a good neighbor. Rabbi Shimon Omer haroa es hanolad, be a person who's roa es hanolad. What does it mean to be roa es hanolad? What does it mean to see the future? What does that mean? So the Rambam in his commentary in Pirkei Avos, source number 12 here, the Rambam says, it says roa es hanolad, not roa es haasid. It doesn't say with an eye to the future. We usually translate or mistranslate it as, what's the derech tova, how should you live life? You should be roa es hanolad. You should look to the future, but that's not what it says. It doesn't say roa es haasid. It says roa es hanolad. What is the difference between nolad and asid? Asid means the future, a future dimension, a dimension in time. Nolad means keep an eye to what will be born in the future from what I'm doing now. It's an incredible comment by the Rambam. The Rambam is explaining that the reason I look to the future is not because I want to be lost in the future. It's not speculative. It's not dreaming. I look to the future so that it informs and guides, inspires my present. Haroa not es ha'asid. I'm not looking at the future, but roa es hanolad. I'm looking at the word nolad means what will be born. What will be born from what I'm doing right now. Dr. John Kabat-Zinn, who is the father of the modern mindfulness movement, who was a doctor and then wrote many books about this, has a great quote. Now is always the right time because it is the only time. There is no past. There is no future. We can't control it. We can't get there. We can't transform it or guide it or edit it. The only dimension we live in is here and now. Now is always the right time because it is the only time. So I want to go through a few more minutes tonight and then going forward to show what I believe, that Judaism as a whole, Yahadus, is a platform for mindful living. All of Torah and all of Halacha and everything we have and everything we know is a platform to guide us about how to live in the moment, how to be present, how to live in the only dimension that matters, how to take everything out of it and how to give everything to it, how to have the greatest relationships during it. The Ramchal of Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the Ramchal, the author of Mesilas Yesharim, the Path of the Just, the great Ramchal. So here in source 14, he begins the second quality. He authors his book Mesilas Yesharim. We give a shiur on it Wednesday mornings for 10 minutes every Wednesday morning. And it's called 10 Minutes of Meaning. And the Ramchal introduces us, he works off Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Rav Pinchas ben Yair had a 12-step program. It wasn't a 12-step program of recovery, it was a 12-step program of realizing our best selves, of Shleimus. How do you achieve the closest to perfection you can come? And it begins with the character trait of Zihirus. Zihirus is the very first character trait. It's translated here as watchfulness, but I would translate it more as mindfulness. Zahira says caution, watchfulness, being present, thinking. It's being present in every thought, speech, and action. Fully, fully. And the Ramchal here writes the following. The idea, the notion of Zahiros is that a person should be cautious, should be present in all they do. To be deliberate, to be thoughtful in all of your actions and all of your paths. Are they good or bad? You don't just live recklessly. You don't just walk through life callously and casually, like a blind person stumbling through the dark, hoping not to trip and fall, hoping not to injure or harm another. There are people who live their lives that way. They simply, whatever comes to their mind, they say it immediately. And whatever their impulse, they act on it immediately. And whatever they want to do, their temptation, they indulge it immediately. It's like a blind person walking in the dark. That's not how we live life. That's not how you're going to live your best self. That's not how you're going to achieve your most. It's not how you're going to get the most out of life either. If you know the things that can harm you, if you know the things that will hurt you, that will bring you down, that will deplete and deprive you of joy and happiness and pleasure in life, why wouldn't you be more thoughtful and strategic in avoiding the things that will hurt you and pursuing the things that will bring you pleasure? Why wouldn't you? How foolish, how absolutely foolish to live a life and to behave in that way. And yet, so many, too many of us do exactly and behave exactly that way. Let me tell you in the reverse. I want you to imagine for a moment what your life would look like. How much better all the relationships you have would be. They'd be better in high definition, better on steroids. They'd much greater every pleasure you experience would be if you simply were fully engaged in the moment, in them all. If you thought before everything that you said, whatever I'm about to say to my spouse, my friend, my child, my parent, my boss, how will it land? What will the impact? How will it be responded to? Imagine if we had the capability and capacity to be thoughtful in everything we said and in everything we did. I'm putting this in my mouth. Do I need it? Am I hungry or am I full? Is this good for me or will it harm me? What goes in our mouth, what comes out of our mouth? If we lived with mindfulness, with zihiros, the type of life we would live. And you'll say, well, that's only for the most righteous. That's for an incredibly disciplined person. And here the Ramchal continues, you know how pathetic and lowly we are? It's pathetic. Beasts and wild animals who have a natural instinct and inclination to protect themselves from the things that will harm them. An animal has a natural animal instinct to run away from something that will harm it. And what do? We run to it. We run to the Lashon Hara. And we run to the fattening food. And we run to the laziness and procrastination. And we run to the Yetzer Hara. The lowly, pathetic animal who has a fraction of the brain capacity we have. And yet, the animal does better and knows more that if something harms me, avoid it. And if something helps me, run to it. And we struggle to do the opposite. We do the opposite. Haholech be'olam ha'beliyas bonenis im tova darko ura. Hinehu kasuma haholech hasfasa nar. Asher sakanasa vadei atzuma v'ra'aso karova me'atzalaso. One who walks this world without considering the way of life, whether it's good or bad, without being mindful and present to evaluate and judge everything you're about to say and think and do, it's like a blind person walking on the shore of the sea in great danger, whose chances of being lost are far greater than those of being saved. For there is no difference between natural blindness and self-inflicted blindness. The shutting of one's eyes is an act of will and desire. So there are two ways that we could live our life. We could live our lives blindly and foolishly, and then we'll fall into all kinds of traps and mistakes. Or we could live our life thoughtfully. I don't know if there's any golfers on here, but I'll give you a golf metaphor, if there are. And if there aren't, you'll forgive me. What's the metaphor? You know, you have two personalities who stand on a golf tee. You have the grip it and rip it, and you have the course management. The grip it and rip it is the guy or the girl who grabs the club and swings as hard as they can, and they've never even looked out to see, where's the sand trap? Where's the water? Where should I lay up? What's the distance? How can I eliminate the pitfalls, the obstacles, the things that will bring me down? And then you have the course management people. They stand on the tee strategically. They take a moment to look and they say, well, the wind's blowing this way and the water's there and I don't want to leave it there. And if I were to hit it this way, I'd get in trouble there. So here's the club and here's the distance and here's the swing and here's how I'm going to manage the course. And in life, you have grip it and rip it people. And they spend a lot of time repairing a lot of damage they've done and a lot of casualties they've left in their wake. And then you have the people who manage their lives, who think about the outcome. They start a meeting and with the goal, with having concluded where they want to go, and they've asked themselves, how are they going to get there? They start a conversation, particularly the most important and meaningful ones, by saying, what's the purpose of this conversation and how am I going to get there? An animal, a pathetic and lowly animal, knows what will harm it and knows what will help it and knows how to run to that which will help and knows how to avoid that which will harm. And too many of us are more pathetic, are more lowly, are inferior to the animal because we run to that which will harm and we run away from that which will help. And so that's why this is the first midah that the Ramchal focuses on. Hinei Yirmiyahu Yemasonin Aurah Bnei Dor Bnei Hayosim Negum Benega Midah Azos Yirmiyahu Anavi, who of course lived the destruction that we're about to grieve and mourn. And he complained. He complained about the men of his generation, the people of his generation. They were Negum Benega Midah Azos. They were afflicted exactly with this. Shayu Ma'alimim Einemim Ma'aseim Ablisha Asimu Leiv Liros Maheim. They lived their lives with a grip it and rip it mentality. They literally put a blindfold over their eyes. They walked through life blindly. Should I do this or should I abandon it? Va'amar aleihem, and Yirmiyahu Anavi says about them, Ein ish nechama ra'asa leimor, kulo shav b'mirutzasam kesus shotei v'milchama. No one regrets his wrongdoing. They all turn away in their course as a horse, rushing headlong into battle. There's no thoughtfulness. There's no strategic thinking or planning. There's no anticipating roa es hanolad, what will be born out of what I'm doing today. How much damage is done? How many casualties are left in the wake? And here the Ramchal continues and he says that the power of the satan lies in rushing a person to carry out an action right away before we stop to consider. Before we stop to consider. The deed is already done. Look at this last paragraph. Ken hi atas yetzahara mamash al b'nei adam. The methodology of the yetzahara, this alter ego within us, the voice of self-sabotage within us. Ki ish melchama hu melumed ba'armimus. This voice, how does it work? It says, it's a warrior, and it's well-versed in deception. So even though we're supposed to be much more sophisticated and much more advanced than the animal, we struggle. The animal avoids that which harms it and runs to that which helps it, and we do the opposite. Even though we're supposed to be superior, more sophisticated, more advanced, so how do we have to defeat the voice of self-sabotage in our heads? We have this voice. It says, eat that. You deserve it, and who cares? And you skipped lunch 4 weeks ago, and the two fasts coming up in the next 3 weeks. So you'll have a pint of ice cream in the middle of the night on your way to bed. Because that's a voice of your head of stupidity. It's moronic. Nobody ever woke up in the morning and said, that was a good decision. Proud of that decision. That went well. That worked out well. Nobody. Nobody ever reacted with rage or anger towards their spouse or children, flew off the handle. Nobody ever said something that hurt deeply someone they love and said, you know, good decision. I'm proud of that. That went well. I'm glad I just went with my instinct. I'm glad I gave in to my intuition. Ever. So the only way to live life in this present, says the Ramchal, a life of zehirus, is chachma rabba v'ashkafa gedola. You need great wisdom and broad outlook. The introduction to his book, he says, you need to keep reading his book and rereading his book to live that life of mindfulness, of zehirus. Humasha hanavi tzavach v'omer. The Navi Chagai said, simu levavchem al darcheichem. Simu levavchem, put your heart into what you're doing. It doesn't mean do it with passion, with energy, with enthusiasm. It means do it with a sense of presence. Do it with a sense of mindfulness. Know what you're doing. Know what you're doing in that moment. Chachamenu Amra Gemar and Sota Kol Hasham Archosa Ba'olam Hazeh Zocha V'Rabbi Yeshuasa Shekadosh Baruch Hu. All who deliberate upon their path in this world will be worthy to witness the Yeshua of Hashem in the next world. Upashad Hushafilu Yifakach Atmo, Aim Bakokhli Natalula Kadosh Baruch Hu Ozo, Kayetzahara Takif Ma'od. Even with all the chachma, even with the wisdom and the effort, you cannot persevere and triumph without Hashem. You have to daven to Hashem for help. You have to daven for Hashem for help when it comes to this. It is so challenging. It is so easy. It is so easy. The methodology of the Yetzahara is to knock us out of our present, our mindfulness, to make us stop thinking. That's what the Yetzahara does. When you're standing opposite the freezer, opposite the cabinet, when your words are coming to your lips as you're about to say them and you know you're going to regret them, the Yetzirah says, brain, shut down. Turn them into a moron. turn them into a fool, turn them into more lowly than an animal, and that's how. So what is the antidote? What is the response? To never ever allow our brain to be shut down or turned off. To be mindful and present, to live with zehiras and caution in all that we do. We'll end here, we'll start with this next week. I'll give you a little preview to it. It's from the Harvard Gazette, Wandering Mind, a statistic that came out of Harvard, which is mind-boggling. And the statistic is the following. In fact, look at this actually before we do. The altar of Navardik, Rav Yisrael Yozel Horowitz, the altar of Navardik, one of the great Musar personalities and the students of Rav Yisrael Solanter. The power of the Sultan lies in rushing a person to carry it in action right away before he stops to consider and wonder about what he's doing. The deed is done and there he stands deliberating after the fact. How do you clean up the mess by the thoughtless comment you made? How do you clean up the mess by the poor investment, poor decision, poor choice that you made? How do you clean up the mess? How do you repair the damage because you weren't thoughtful while you were doing it or before you did it? So now you're deliberating after the fact. That is the strategy and methodology of the Yetzirah. And if you think that this is just the Balei Musar, it's the Ramchal and the altar of Navardik, then look at this statistic, which is mind-boggling and astounding. People spend 46.9% of their waking hours thinking about something other than what they were doing. Oops, sorry. And this mind-wandering typically makes them unhappy. So says a study that used an iPhone web app to gather 250,000 data points and subjects, thoughts, feelings, and actions as they went about their lives. This is several years old. I don't know what it would be today. But it basically means 47% of the time, nearly half the time that we're doing something, nearly half the time that our waking hours, we're thinking about something other than we're doing. Thinking about something other than what we're doing. It's shocking. Can you imagine? What does that mean? It's mind-boggling. It's really, really hard to even believe that. Nearly half the time, we're thinking about something other than what we're actually doing in that moment. So half of our life, we weren't ever present. Half of our life, we missed. We weren't really there. We were reading, we were looking, we were texting, we were listening. Our mind was wandering. Half the time that we're doing something, our mind isn't even there. The research by psychologists Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert of Harvard, a human mind is a wandering mind, and a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. The ability to think about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement that comes at an emotional cost. Mirza Shem will pick up with this next Tuesday night, same time, towards this journey to our best selves that begins with being by ourselves, mindfulness, being present, living in the dimension, the only one that really matters. I hope that we should all be zocha, we should all merit to not just survive during this time period, but Amir Tashem to be able to thrive as well. Those who want to hear the recording, it'll be up on YU Torah and on my website, RabbiEphraimGoldberg.org as well. Somebody asked, somebody texted, YU Torah and RabbiEphraimGoldberg.org. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Thank you so much for joining.